On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know you got the firepower. What's your favorite gun?
Oh, man. F&H. Got to keep that. You know, I got the new mini ARs. But, you know, back in the day, it was the Glock. I rapped about it every day. You know, the Glock 40, that was like my, you know what I mean? And I think that's it. Like, you know, you really don't want to do the baby AKs. Like, those, I don't know what that's for. That's like... The Draco, it's just like, it's confusing.
why the Glock? Why was that your favorite?
It just symbolized safe to me. It's just like, it's black, it's solid, it has a dope case, you can lock it up. It just came the way it came. And, you know, I've always been a defense person. Like, I'm about protecting me and my family, the people I love. So it ain't nothing that you brandish. It's nothing that you it's not for that. It's to protect. You know what I'm saying? And I just feel like it was something just dependable. And plus, you got that hair trigger, so you know.
Jeezy is one of the most iconic and legendary MCs to ever come out of the South. We're going to get into his difficult childhood, his thoughts on the war on drugs, MCing everything. Right now, let's do it. It's the Snowman, Jeezy, on Torre Show. We all know and love you as an MC, so let's talk about hip-hop. What do you love about rhyming?
For me, it's therapeutical. I've always been a visionary. So as I go through things, trying to get to, you know, to my goals, I had a lot of setbacks and things happen that you have to use your mind to navigate it. And I got infatuated with adversity because it's like you really could go through that. And I just started putting it in the music because, you know, I used to write things down or write things that I felt. And I was able to put words together and I can feel and see what I'm saying better when I write it out. And I grew up loving music. So Tupac and all these different cats. And I just fell in love with, you know, you could tell that he was a revolutionary just by what he spoke about. So I was just like, if I had a chance to do my thing, like what it would it be about? And I stumbled upon the whole thug motivation thing because I just would notice when I would talk to older people, they would ask me questions. I already had an answer and I was confident about it. And that made them take to me a little bit more. And when I started doing music, people would be like, yo, your confidence, what you're saying, I feel you. I'm from where you from. And I just fell in love with that, just that connection. And it was just like, it's a real thing. And I just never... straight away from that. So it wasn't about selling records. It was more about connecting with people and just being in the hearts of women, men, and children. And I fell in love with that. You know what I mean? Because it's the whole thing. It's how I'm packaged. It's how I talk. It's what I say. It's what I wear. You know what I'm saying? It's just like all those different things together. That's what makes me special. And the fact that I can pull from my struggle and relate to theirs, that's what I love about hip hop. Like I love that this it's a us thing. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
From where we're from, you might not get it. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? I love it.
You said something really interesting. You said that you're infatuated with adversity.
Yeah.
I think most people like don't want adversity. We have goals. We just want to get there. I don't want traffic right. and hurdles in the way. What do you mean right. by infatuated with adversity?
Because the people that you normally hear about that make it, they went through the worst. And they just never gave up. Because that's the game. You just can't quit. No matter what it is, you can't quit. You got to just do something else. And it really dawned on me, like, because what infatuated me about it, and we'll talk about my show a little bit later and why I went that route with the talk show, is because when I'm hearing these things, I'm like, damn, like, what would you thinking when you're going through these things? And it's just like, if you hear anybody that is successful in their own right, they came from some type of pain, it came from some type of struggle, and it came from having their back against the wall and them doing something that they never did to become somebody who they've never been. And if you really like listen to immigrant stories, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm very well traveled and open-minded. You hear these things. Like, it's just like, I came to this country and I ain't have 2 cents. I knew no one. And now I own 30 restaurants. Like, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah.
I came here and, you know, and I didn't have anything. And now you just set up so well. And, you know, you come here and it's like America's like, you know, the home of the free, and anything can happen in America. But these are the people that go through the most turmoil. And even the people that were born and raised here and they're the true Americans, you know, especially like myself and people that look like me that get out of the slums and figure it out. It's like, if you really sat down and talked to them about some of the things they went through, you wouldn't believe it.
Because well, I know a lot of things. Let's talk about some of the things that you've been through, because it was single parent coming up in Atlanta, right? Not much money. No. Going through it, what did, and now look at you, right? American dream. How did you get from the kid who just you and your mom, really nothing's going on, not much money. How did you get from that to just even being an MC?
I tell people all the time, and I think that they don't really get, because I'm not that great. Like, it's not me. It's the gift. I knew at a young age, like that, when I was in my mom's house, I helped my mom get her first home. It was my father and my mom divorced. We got our first home. It was a $3,500 trailer. It wasn't big enough to think. You know what I'm saying? If the wind blew, it was 10. I don't know if you know about like the 10, like 10 foil, but it's like 10. And when the wind blow, you hear it. And, you know, I bought my mom that trailer and she called it home and she was cool with it. And she was so happy. And I'm just like, wow, like this ain't it. And I was already on a mission in my mind in like elementary and middle school on how to do better and how to make myself better. Like, that was my whole thing in life. As far as I can remember, I had this burning sensation in my stomach on like, how can I be better? How can I learn more? And even at a young age, I didn't like to have conversations with people unless I can take some away from the conversation. Because other than that, like, we just talking. And, I just set out on a path, and I told myself, you know, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the consequences, I'm going to do what I got to do to get my mom out of this situation and to put myself in a better situation and the people around me, including my sister, because I ended up putting her through college, and I didn't get a chance to go to college or school because I was hustling to put her through college.
When did you start hustling? When did you start in the street?
Maybe around 11. 11 was when I really, you know, I was dibbling, dabbling, you know, little small things here and there for my cousins and uncles, but I didn't really get full fledged in until I was about 11. And I told myself when I jumped off the porch, I was like, there ain't but one rule. You can do this, but you got to be smart. You got to know you got to have an end goal and you cannot get caught. That's it. So you have to use what you've been given, which is your sense. And I have great judge of character when it comes to people. And I have great skills when it comes to visualizing things and how it should playing out. So meaning like, I know in my mind, if you tell me tomorrow we're going to Belize to do something, I'm going to already see in my mind what can be done while we're there and we're there and who's your team. It's like a whole thing with me. And then I go, okay, cool. I got it. All right, it's cool. We do want to believe. So I know what to do if something go left or if it go right. But that's a gift I have. It's really a gift. So for me, to answer your question, like it was understanding, you know, when I got in the streets, you know, not to get caught up and to make the best out of it. And here we go again, full circle. The music was what was giving me the knowledge that I didn't have, because I didn't know what not to do and how to do it. And you know what I'm saying? So I'm just listening to what Master P saying. I'm listening like, okay, that makes sense. I'm listening to what Tupac saying. So I'm just getting all this information. And when I'm sitting down talking to people, they're like, damn, like, you smart. And I'm like, you know, I like that. You know what I mean? So I listen to more. And then I start asking adults real questions and asking my cousins that was older than me and that was really doing it real questions. Like, you know.
So wait, when did you start saying, okay, I'm heavy in this.
Right.
But I might need to do something else, because that game, you knew from the beginning, this right. game, you don't retire from that game.
Right. No, I'm going to be honest. Like, that's a whole nother conversation. I had so many close calls. Like, it was even real. And I realized, like, and I mean like real ones, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I realized that it was something different, because I was watching, you know, people around me get indicted. And I'm talking about, like, you're talking about 120 people at one time that I was running with every day get indicted. And the only thing that saved me was the fact that I was in the studio most of the time. You're talking about situations where things happened that I was just 5 minutes. I left right before it was raided, or, you know, it was so many different things. And I'm just sitting there one day and I'm like, God, he's taking me out of these situations because he has a bigger plan for me. Because it wasn't nothing that I was doing that was so savvy or so smart. It was just more so like, that ain't for you. But I'm like, how do I still be who I am and do something that I can do? Because I got a sixth grade education at the time. You know, I got my GED when I was locked up. So how can I do something that I can do and be successful that's not going to take me away from who I am, because this is all I know? And the more things that started happening, I was like, yo, I'm just start putting my money in music. And I started off as a CEO. So I went and bought all this studio equipment, went and signed some homies in the hood. And I was sitting in the studio with them every day trying to help them come up with records, but they was gangbanging and going through all this shit. One of them got killed. The other one ended up killing somebody. He's still in prison now. And the other one just was like, the hell with it. And I'm sitting there and all my money's tied up in the studio. And one of my homeboys looking at me is like, well, your life's the one that's real. Why don't you do it? And I'm just like, you know what? I know I'm going to give it my all. I think I'm going to try for it. And I just started, you know, going in the studio, trying to make records. And it was hard because I'm not a musically inclined person to where I can go in there and know what a song format is. I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, so I just trial and error and trial and error and trial and error. But what I did know is that I was solid. So if I figured it out, then once I got the music to a place where it was like cool, then I started using my hustling skills. Like, okay, what do I do if I want people to buy into what I'm doing?
The marketing you had. But you right. had to get the musicality. So
right.
when you were developing as an MC in those early days, trying to figure it out, who were the MCs or the musicians who were in your mind, who were influencing you, that led to the style that you have?
Well, I loved Cash Money at the time because of what they represented. And I knew that watching them do what they did, they was like me. They was from the hood.
Were you more... as an MC, more Birdman than Wayne?
Yeah, yeah. Way more Birdman.
Yeah. That seems to be more who you are as an MC. Yeah.
Wayne was like, I was a fan of Wayne growing
Wayne's
up.
Incredible.
Like, he was Wayne, Juvenile, and you know who else really? E-40. Because when Be Legit and they had to click, that was what I was riding. That was like my motivation music, because I'm like, I'm hearing what they're talking about. And I'm feeling it. And I'm like, yo, like this is who I am. And the more I gravitated to it, because it's crazy. Like, I grew up on UGK, and I'm one of the first features I got because I just knew some street cats that knew him, and I would see in the club when I was out. And I called him. I was like, yo, Big D, like, you think you can get Bond to do a song with me? He was like, yeah, if you're going to give him the money. I like, shit, pull up. I got it. You know what I'm saying? And I gave him the money. And it was like, I went about it wrong too, though, because I had bread. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was really getting money. Like, I was like, anybody that know me know I was really getting it. Like, I was first cat in the hood with the Lexus, Bubble, the Expeditions on Mickey Thompson, like, you name it, like the BMW station wagons. But what I was doing that was wrong was I was actually spending money. So this one, Lil Jon and all them was hot. Like, I was giving Lil Jon to tell you, like, I wanted to beat from Lil Jon because he was hotter than fist grease. And he charged me like 50 racks. And I took him $50,000 in a grocery bag. I remember it's like a Kroger bag, like a plastic bag. And then it would be like, I wanted to verse from Pastor Troy. So I had to give him, you know, 20 piece. You know what I'm saying? So I was really just like dissing out all this money and it wasn't working. But what it was doing was letting people know that I was serious about who I was and that it was real. So when I figured the music out and it went with who people was knowing me to be, it was like, okay, well, he is solid. And what happened was I went to this club on the east side. I made this mixtape called The Streets Is Watching with DJ Drama. And that's a whole nother story because he didn't even want to do a tape with me. I had to convince him over like 3 years. And we finally did the tape and I had some bread put up and I was like, I'm about to spend all this because I'm about to blow up. And I started going to buy CDs from this guy who was pressing CDs. And what I would do was buy 100,000 CDs at a time. And they had this event in Atlanta called the Birthday Bash. And it's like the biggest thing in Atlanta for the radio station. All the people come there and there's normally like 30, 40,000 people there. And so what I did was paid all these people to stand outside the birthday bash and pass out my CDs. And then there was a party that weekend at this club on the east side called the Prime Time. And I, with my team of people I paid, went to that club and passed out CDs to everybody in that club. And once I saw that there was people that was really in that club that was frequenting, I went there for the next 3-4 months every Sunday to that same club and passed out my CDs. Until they called me for a show. They're like, we don't even know who you are, but everybody's playing your music. And that's when I was like.
Yeah, you blew up fast. And I want to say something real, right? Because I'm from the early, early days of hip hop, grew up listening to every cassette from the beginning. And I was a real New York snob. And there were a lot of us who were like, psh, West Coast, whatever, South, whatever. And when you blew up, a lot of New Yorkers could still be real snobby about it, like, psh, whatever. And nobody thinks like that anymore. And when you were first coming up, I was like, yeah, he's all right, but he rhymed real slow. And I know a lot of New Yorkers said the same thing. And I know you heard that before. And, you know, people loved you even no matter what some of us were saying, right? So we were wrong. But I wonder what you say to somebody like me who is being a New York snob who's like, yeah, Jeezy's cool, but he rhymes really slow.
Right. Well, the thing that I had, it wasn't about the music. It was about the package. I spoke for hustlers. I spoke for people who was ambitious that wanted more than what people around them thought. It was like what Jay-Z was talking about. Like I was listening to Ain't No Nigga in the Trap. You know what I'm saying? Like, and people were like, what the hell are you listening to? I'm like, yo, this is Jay-Z. He talk about things I couldn't even envision. If you ain't on the same flight, if you ain't getting manicures, like I can't even, you know, go around the block in my old Buick Regal. And he's talking about these things. I'm like, damn. So what I'm saying is, and the reason why even me and Jay connected so well is because we speak the same language. It's not about the music. It's about the package. It's about how you come, your demeanor, what do you say, how you carry yourself. And it goes, he might talk slow, but I understand where he's coming from. You see what I'm saying? Like, I get it. Like, he's the one that sticks out. If you go in a neighborhood, you can see the person that everybody looks to for leadership. He doesn't even know he's the leader. He's packaged right. He gets it. And for me, I got it. And I stuck to my guns because at that time, music was crunk. You had a little Scrappy and all that whole movement. Then it was Snap. And I had the slowest music ever. Like Trap or Die was slow. But when it did take off, when they played that mixtape in the clubs, you would have 3,000-4,000 people reciting every word just because I talked slow and they understood what I was saying.
That was a big difference that the South had and the West had, that you rhymed slow enough that people could learn the words really quickly.
Right.
You know,
not only learn, feel. You see what I'm saying? They felt me. They're like, damn, you know, like, okay. It's the package. You know what I'm saying? Do I believe him? Well, let me ask somebody, you know Jeezy? Oh, man, yeah. That's all it take. Penitentiary. Yo, yeah, your man Jeezy. Yeah, you know, I'm in here with his man doing 10. You know what I mean? He say he liked that. That's all you need. It's the package.
I mean, we definitely believed that you were who you said you were, right? Right. There were definitely MCs who was like, I don't know if he's really doing all the stuff he's talking about, but we definitely believe he's real. So that's what you're talking about with the package.
Package, and then what I'm saying is, it's like word of mouth. It's like if you don't check out, people are not going to believe what you say, but if somebody from Baltimore that's really just known for being solid go, oh no, I rock with him. He, you know, I know some of his people. You got the whole Baltimore just off that.
Right.
One word. That one cosign gets you the whole thing because that's who they respect. You see what I'm saying? It's the package. It's like, you can be the music, but if I don't respect you, I'm not telling nobody to listen to what you're talking about.
But at, you know, some point, but at some point, you got to be able to go in the studio, hear a beat, get in the pocket, and make us feel you as an MC. And what was the point at which you were like, okay, I got this MC shit. Like, I feel like I'm not trial and error anymore. I know I'm here.
Well, when I saw what was starting to happen in the streets and what was starting to transpire, and I just felt the energy shift. Like, it was fun. It was cool. It was that. And then you start saying like, oh, it's about to be some real time giving out around here. I could see it. Like, you know, when them indictments start rolling around and shit start getting real, to be honest with you, I went in, and when I did Trap or Die and Summer Thug Motivation, if I'm honest, I didn't think I was going to be free in time for it to come out or live. So I gave it everything I had. It was like, if I'm never heard again, they got to hear this. And when I got my deal, this is no lie, I told them this the other day when they asked me about that. I was so passionate and so not so uncertain about how I was going to play out. I had a lady that worked with me, and I was going up to Def Jam when I first got my deal right before Thug Motivation, because I had like most of it recorded already. And we was on this flight, me and her. And she was like, well, I brought your drive so that you can go to the studio and knock some of this stuff out that you need to knock out. And I lost it. I was like, you telling me that my vocals and my drive is on the same flight as me? If the plane go down right now, ain't nobody gonna hear this. You know what I'm saying? We both gonna be gone. You know what I'm saying? And that's how passionate I was, because I was like, I just want the world to hear what I gotta say. Like, they gotta feel me. So, and
that is the most incredible mindset going into an album, that I'm not sure I'm gonna be free or alive. Yeah. So I'm gonna put everything. This might be my last will and testament. So I'm just gonna, like, I have no fear. I'm just gonna say everything.
Which was why a lot of the resistance came, because it was just like, is he dry snitching? Is he telling on people? It's just like, nah, this is all I got. I'm not a carpenter. I can't tell you how to fix a house. I'm not a mechanic. I don't know nothing about the cars. You know what I'm saying? But I am from the streets, and this is what I see. This is what I know. And this is the soundtrack to everything that I'm going through and everything that I see, even if the people around me don't see it like this. And when it happened and it blew up, it was a shift. I felt it. And that's why I go about the things the way that I do, win, lose, or draw, because it ain't me, it's the gift. I was elected to do this. Like, I didn't come in and just say, yo, this is how the people put me in this position. You know what I'm saying? So I feel obligated to be straight up with them. And I can tell when I'm not, because they're not buying into it. Like, you could tell when you're not doing, saying what you should do, because people are like, nah, I don't really.
See, that's, you know, a great MC. When you feel like you are a representative of the people, absolutely, right? Like, I stand for, you know, the north side of Atlanta or the south side of Newark, right, or, you know, Brooklyn or whatever. Like, so I got to tell you what it is and show you in the videos what it is in my hood, because I am I'm like a congressman or a senator for my community.
But the thing about it was a little bigger than that. I had become the hood president, if you will. I was the Barack Obama of the struggle. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I was the guy. And everything I did had to apply with that. So it was a real responsibility that I took seriously. And that's why I wasn't afraid to evolve. Because I'm like, you put me in this position to lead. I understand that. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to be very responsible about everything that I do, including making myself better. Like, I came in the game smoking, drinking, all that. I was like, hold up, this ain't it. Let me figure this out. And I started figuring certain things out. Okay, I want to be around. I want to be healthy. Let me figure it out. So now if you see it, people are not scared to take some of those turns because it was like either you doing what we doing, you gun toting, you're running with 100 people, you're doing that, do that, and that's it. And then you die. It's it. We saw it. Tupac. It stopped there for me. There's nobody after that that I feel like I respected more. But what I do know and that people never took into consideration, Tupac was in the theater. He was in the poetry. He was in the acting. He was in the activism. He was in so many different things, but we just respected his music. We didn't see what a gift he was because we were so caught up in his thugging. And he was only thugging for us. And it took his life. But he could have been, you know, it could have been Machiavelli on Broadway. You know what I'm saying? But we didn't let him do that. Mm-hmm. We boxed him in. So for me, like, my whole thing is watching that and coming from the streets and knowing that I've seen people before me make mistakes. I don't want to make that same mistake. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do everything that I feel like I need to do as a representative of the people, because they got to see, if you want to do a talk show, you can do that.
Well, I want to talk about your show, but I want to hear about, how do you write a rhyme? Are you in the phone? Are you pen to paper? Mm-hmm. Are you straight off the dome? How do you do it?
Well, this project in particular album, I wrote everything.
On paper, on the phone?
On the paper.
Michelle Obama is one of the most inspiring, intelligent, graceful, unapologetically Black people that I could think of. Just her existing makes me happy, makes me feel inspired, makes me want to be a little bit more like her every day, because she seems to be just this extraordinary person. So if there's any sort of podcast about her, I want to listen to that. Life Kit from NPR has a whole episode on Michelle Obama. It's part of their whole Black Stories, Black Truths collection, where you'll hear stories of Black joy, Black resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account of what it means to be Black today from a unique Black perspective. There's a Code Switch episode about Dr. King, and I love Code Switch. There's It's Been a Minute about Eric Andre, who I love. We are not the same person, even though a lot of people think we look alike, even though he lives in my neighborhood now. But stop telling him he looks like me. Stop telling me I look like him. There's a pop culture happy hour about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I loved that show. That show meant so much to me. This is what Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR is all about. Stories about Black America and Black culture. Whole pop culture happy hour on Abbott Elementary, which is another amazing modern Black show. From Megan Thee Stallion to the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, to the women behind the Montgomery bus boycott, to the Color Purple, the stories of Black Stories, Black Truths will take you inside the Black community and Black culture. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham. A keenly observed novel about a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man in America. Colm McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book, available wherever books are sold.
On paper, my better half gave me a notepad when I got off the plane. Brand new notepad, ain't have nothing in it.
So is it like the producer gives you, you know, some beats and you listen and you write, or you write in the studio?
This one, like when I know I'm in pocket, I go in with the theme, like I go in with how I feel. Like I knew this felt. I'm writing this while I'm watching news clips. Riots happening. I'm watching this. I'm writing this while I'm running up the street to go to participate in the march. You know what I'm saying? Speak to the people and march with the NAACP. I'm writing this when I'm talking to the mayor of Atlanta because she wants me to sit down with Joe Biden. I'm writing this when all these things are going on. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, oh, okay. And that's what's coming out of me because it's a theme now. It's like, no, you have to embody what comes with that. And that's bigger than just being an artist or an MC. So the things that you're pinning up, you know what I mean? They have to be your true feelings and what your true emotions are. And for me, you can't just think that and say it. You have to write it down and look at it. It's like writing a poem. You know what I'm saying? You got to write it, revise it a couple times, and you got to feel it as you say it. And then the next person to read it and feel how you felt. It was that. It was like, I couldn't just put words together. They had to mean something. You know what I'm saying? So when you hear, oh, Lord, and me come in, my mama's still sick, I'm giving you an update. Like, I'm still going through shit. You know what I'm saying? Ain't shit new. Ain't much changed. The hood's still blue. You know what I'm saying? They catch you off at Wendy's, they might kill you too. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you just put them in, like, it's like the opening credits to a movie. This is what's happening. I'm opening the film. It's opening up. And here we go. It's it. We in this. And you in it with me. If you feel me. And it was like knowing that, when you tell them Black Lives Matter until you need a loan, you know, those are real quotes. You know what I'm saying? We can't vote for Trump because he don't feel us. We can't vote for Trump because he gonna kill us. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's real. You know what I'm saying? You know, like young thug daughter. I said, we motherfucking tired. Dear Mr. President, you motherfucking fired. Get your ass out of here. You feel what I'm saying? And that's before he lost the election, because I know it's happening. You might not see it. He's ass out of here because he's not the right person for the job. And I'm saying, you're saying that. That's my truth. A lot of people might not agree with me, but I saw that before it was going to even happen because of what was going on and what's transpiring. And us as a culture, we so caught up in this internet and this Instagram and all these things, we forget that 4 months ago, we was out here fighting for our lives. People were buying stuff to get ready to protect their families. But as soon as something good happened, it's kumbaya, we forget about it. So I don't want to let you forget about it. You know what I'm saying? I want to bring you to speed. I want to tell you, hey, this is what's going on, and I'm going to open this movie, and we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it on every level.
When you the way you talked about your style right there, you remind me a lot of Ice Cube and the way that he would make movies with his words and get pictures and really try to make you feel it. Is he one of your influences?
Well, Ice Cube got two songs I'll never forget. It's called What Can I Do? And What Can I Do? And it's one more. We talk about, you know how we do it. And he painted this picture about, you know, he's just painting these different pictures. And the difference, I think, between the two is he had a militant mind state on, you know, being a gangster. I got a militant mind state on being a Black man in America and having to do whatever it is you got to do to survive. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the difference. Like, clearly to me, my message is, listen, you got to evolve somewhere. You got to figure it out. It ain't no playbook. Ain't no mentors. You got to figure it out. But this is what I know about it, and I'm giving it to you. And back then, Q, to me, put you in a sense of, I'm not going to let my own kind harm me because I'm a G. I'm going to stand up for mine. The game is switched. It ain't our own kind. Even though that's still out there, it's the enemy coming now. It's racism. It's politics. It's, you know what I'm saying? It's different now. Like, it's a whole nother war. It's
the cops. You know, the war on drugs.
Right. It's just all these things coming at you now. So I just want to give you all the tools and the resources that I have. So I think that's the difference between the two. But like that, you know how we do it, and What Could I Do? Is like two of my favorite Cube songs ever.
Tell me,
influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First. Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
About who are the top five MCs who make you feel it the most? Not necessarily the best, right? Different than that, but who make you, and you keep talking about Pac, so I'm assuming you're going to put Pac number one because he really gets it into your heart. But who else?
Jay, definitely. Yeah, he when he's in pocket, like American Gangster, I was just like, okay, I get that. You know what I'm saying? Like he just put me in his mindset of he had to go back to his roots. You know what I'm saying? And then again, I go back to it. Like when you meet Emery, which is his partner, and you know, he just got out and did 10, it all makes sense. Somebody ain't lying. You know what I'm saying? So that's there's that. I feel him on that. In that realm, like I really felt Be Legit. Because to me, Bela is not, he's not an MC. He's just a cat. You could tell he had his hands in the dirt a little bit, but he was running around with E-40 and he was saying some real shit. And you're like, damn, I get it. You know what I'm saying? So to me, like he was just one of those guys I really like. Okay. Feel. And that was from the hustling aspect. Feel. Who else would I say I felt? On the artist level. It's because I rarely rock with a few. I felt Andre 3000.
Hell yeah.
I felt him. He was smart. I felt that. Like he was smarter than he looked. You know what I'm saying? And he was more creative than we thought. I felt that.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
It was one point, you know, I've never been to college. I didn't know what it's like to be a college dropout. I was one point in Kanye's career, I was like, yo, he's fucking different. Who else as far as felt? One more good one. Jadakiss. I really like Jadakiss. I really felt like Jadakiss, I mean, just, he, I never been to Yonkers like that unless I went to Sue's Rendezvous, but he made you feel like he made you feel like he was in that thing. You know what I mean?
Like, his voice is incredible.
Tell me, shit, like
y'all got Magic City, so you know, you good.
Yeah, you good.
Tell me about your show. It's a podcast.
Well, actually, I have two. So I have a podcast, shouts out to Charlemagne the God, that we partner with Black Effect to support the album. It's called the Recession Podcast. And it basically talks about real things, real life, real people problems. And my last guest was Freeway from Rockefeller. And we talked, and you know, he explained to me how he went through his kidney failure and what the process was like to get another kidney and a dialysis. And then in the same conversation about losing his son tragically and having to donate his son's organs to save somebody else's son's life. And at the same time, talking to me, his daughter's to the right of him, and she's 12, 13 years old, and she just been diagnosed with cancer. And I'm going, dog, how are you dealing with all this? And he looked at me and said, it's simple. I have faith and I trust in Allah. Somebody needs to hear that. It's bigger than the music. He had hits. We know it. I love Freeway. But I didn't know he was that strong. I didn't know he was that real. I didn't know he was dealing with all that on his own without, you know, you're telling me about coming off stage and going straight to get to the dialysis machine to treat his blood. And like, you know, you hearing all this, and you like, people are complaining about Instagram filters and how many followers they got. You know what I'm saying? This is real life. My first guest was Tony Robbins. You know what I mean? Somebody that I always was like, I really want to have a conversation with him. And we made it happen. And my first thing to him was like, yo, Tony, what the world need? What we need more of? And it was simple. Compassion. And I'm like, I never thought about it like that. But my people needs to hear me talking to somebody else with a different perspective that only I can have that type of conversation with, because I motivated some thugs. He motivated some people. Now we coming together just trying to see how we can figure it out on our own.
How is it for you interviewing folks when for so long you've been on the other side?
Well, I didn't do well in interviews at first because I felt like I was being interrogated. So I feel like that. I'm like, I don't know nothing. What album? Like, what album? I don't know about that. You know what I mean? But like I said again, from what we were talking about in the beginning, I always like to ask people about what they went through, what happened, how did you do it, why did you do it? You know what I'm saying? Who was in your corner? When nobody else was there, who do you believe? Did you still believe in yourself? So it makes it easier because of the type of conversations that we're having. I'm intrigued by it because I told you in the beginning, I'm fascinated with adversity. I really am. Like, I really like to hear how you got that shit done. So this, to me, goes hand in hand because I'm talking to them about real things. You know what I'm saying? On any level, but it's like, damn, okay? I just want to hear it because it makes me go harder, and it also makes me understand, you know, when I went through things and I got my trauma with things I went through, and I feel like nobody felt me, but actually they did because everybody got their own stuff going on. You know what I'm saying? You just got to ask them. You know, I don't want to know if you're so successful. Like, how does it feel to be successful? Like, what am I gonna get out of that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. But if you asking somebody, like, damn, I mean, like, you know, how was it? You know, Steve Harvey was one of my first guests on Worth the Conversation, which comes on Fox Soul on Wednesday nights. And he was my first guest, and my last guest was John C. Maxwell. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but is that diverse of a group, because it's like, we got to get it all. We got to get a little bit from here, a little bit from here. And that's what I'm saying, is how you packaged. Everybody can't put that, you
but
know,
it goes back. But it goes back to what you said before about you want to have conversations that benefit you, that you can take something correct. Of value away from correct. And not just yapping.
Right. Correct.
So you're giving that to the people.
Giving that to the culture, baby. It's all theirs. They can have it, you know? And it's crazy, too, because I get calls sometimes, like, from people I don't expect, like, yo, that was dope, man. I just really never, you know what I'm saying? And for me, it's just like, it's who I am. If you sit down at a table with me and we have a dinner, I'm going to ask you some questions. I want to know. You know what I'm saying? I got to see. I got to know who I'm dealing with.
Who are you dying to have on the show?
I really want to talk to Barack. I do. I feel that it's crazy that I've sat down with Joe Biden before I sat down with Barack. And I don't know if you know, like, right before when my president came out, right before he won, and then he did win, he invited me to a dinner in L.A., in New York. And, you know, I went out and bought a Tom Ford suit, got my crew clean, everybody. And we get there, and the Secret Service tell me that I can't come in. And that just rubbed me the wrong way from that time. And then he shouted me out of the correspondence dinner a couple months later when he was like, my first term, I sang Al Green. My second term, I'm going Young Jeezy. And I'm like, okay, well, he sees me, but he didn't.
Why didn't they let you in?
I mean, you know, my past is my past. That's all I can tell you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, you might know what. And then he invited a lot of artists to the White House. And I'm like, damn, like, how I'm not on that list? I know my man Ross was in there with a whole leg monitor on. I'm like, man, this is crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like, wow. But, you know, I feel like we got to have a conversation at some point. It has to happen. And it got to be real. It got to be organic. And it got to be us sitting down just with the meeting of the minds, man. You know, just out of respect. And as men, because I feel like that's a conversation that the struggle would love to see.
What do you want to ask him? What's one thing you want to ask him?
I mean, I definitely want to ask him, how did he go? And this is personal for me. How did he go 2 terms, 8 years in office without any scandal? That speaks of integrity to me. You know what I'm saying? Like nothing ever came up, and I'm just like, damn, is he that good? Like, what, you know what I mean? It's like, that's already it's like when you meet somebody and they have friends for 20 years and they got a lot of them and they all say the same thing. You got to know that's a good person. You know what I'm saying? It's been tested. It's been proven. And he's been tested and proven in that space, and he didn't drop the ball. And you still haven't heard anything about that. His family is still intact, and they still move as a unit. So even if they didn't help the economy as much as we thought they should, or what people said, just their unity alone changed the culture. Because if you look at hip hop culture now, everybody wants to show you their wife. Everybody wants to show you their life and their kids. That happened after them. It wasn't like that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like that.
I definitely thought that them making a big deal to go on dates.
Right.
And like that was really valuable. And like, look, you know, I'm super busy. I'm still making that time every once in a while to focus on my wife, take her to a Broadway play, whatever, whatever. And like, I know you're busy doing your job or whatever, but like, you know, every once in a while, make sure you take a bit, take her, you know, something. And you know, I always thought that was really powerful. When you talk about being a black man, trying to survive.
Mm.
And I feel like one of the biggest things that is fucking with our whole community is the war on drugs. Not the drugs, the war on drugs, right? Mm. And the way the police and the criminal justice system come down on us. And I feel like the only way that we're actually going to move forward is to legalize drugs, right? So that, and that would, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, think I'm wrong, but I think that would end the underground market, because the underground market would not be able to compete on a price to risk ratio if there's an above ground market that has excellent prices and doesn't have to worry about, you know, risk of losing arrest, indictment, what have you. What do you think about the idea of legalizing and then ending that whole underground market that has been such a part of your life?
It's hard to say because, you know, going to Amsterdam and visiting there and asking questions, you know, they don't have a lot of violence. You know, they don't have a lot of problems. Everybody there is pretty laid back. And, you know, it's a different scenery. You know, you like, damn, like, you know, a lot of things are legal out there. But also it's a part of their culture, too. With us, I just don't know how that works when people are so used to you know, being able to have the supply and demand, because that's what makes the money, because there's no supply. So you have to get it on the black market, and that's how you actually make the money. And it's crazy to me that you say that, because, you know, I would love to see, like, say, for instance, if you go to Los Angeles and you walk into dispensaries, then people like us that own that. And that was our trade. So that's the part that makes me go, like, what happens when we legalize it? Not to say that it shouldn't be. And then they take control of it. Because when I wanted something to smoke, I used to go around the corner to my auntie's house. You feel what I'm saying? But now you can go up the street. But if we legalize it,
it'll be fewer of us, fewer raids, less police hanging over the hood, fewer of us going away for having a bag.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the business of it. So let me rewind a little bit. I think the whole reform thing is amazing, because I have people that done plenty of time, and I never thought that I would be in a position to help someone get their time cut. It's like never unheard of. I do think for a lot of these crimes, they give out too much time. I think that, you know, if that's the way you're looking at it, I think that you're absolutely right, because, you know, that would cut back. But on people just doing 20 years for something they could have done two for, because now it's legal. And it happens in Atlanta right now, because it's just like a lot of people that was on probation had these cases for small marijuana charges. Now you can't do certain things like get a job, go vote, you know, all these different things. So they kind of box you in. That doesn't make sense to me. So if that's the way you're looking at it, I actually agree. But the thing is, we're talking about weed is what you're saying, right? That's
I mean, for a lot of people, they say let's legalize marijuana, right? And I think that would, I mean, the war on drugs arrests more people for marijuana than anything else. So I think that would have a massive impact on the police presence in the hood, you know, the police attacking people, whether or not they really think they're drug dealers or drug possessors or not. The incarceration, the length, all those sort of things. I go a little further in terms of, I personally think people should be able to put pretty much whatever they want in their body. If you want to do cocaine, that's your choice. We don't want you to then, you know, go get in a car on cocaine. But, you know, but if you can be in your house, sniff your lines, keep it to yourself, maintain your job, you know, not fuck up the world, not go get in a fight. If you go do some cocaine and get in a fight, then we're going to cite you for being in a fight. But, you know, like, you could drink alcohol.
I think what we should do is have that whole conversation where we can just really sit down and chop it up, because I got so many questions. I'm not saying...
Well, go ahead.
I don't know my position on that. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause I never thought about it that far. But when you said legalize, I was thinking marijuana. Now you
mainly
talking about
we talk
that?
About marijuana. Mainly, most people are talking about marijuana. I just think that the police attack on black and brown communities is having a greater negative effect on us, on America, but specifically on our communities, than the drugs have ever had, right? Addiction is less of a problem than over-policing in the hood and over-incarceration and over-criminalization to where then people, you know, like can't be with their families in public housing when they are separated because they're in prison, because they can't vote, you know, because you even if you do a little bit and now you can't get a job, so now what are you going to do? You trapped in the cycle. So if we can end that,
It's a cycle.
Some people are going to deal with addiction, you know, and you know, and we need to be able to help them get out of addiction and not stigmatize addiction. Mm-hmm. But I'd rather risk that, you know, because a lot of people will be able to smoke. There's a lot of people at all levels of society who smoke a joint or sniff a line.
I've seen that going in the dispensary. Like, it's people you wouldn't think. It's regular working people. You know, it's different. You know what I mean? But I mean, I that's something I haven't thought about, but you have a point on as far as like how we're stereotyped and how we're sought out and how we're pulled over and how we're, you know, interrogated, our cars are checked because they think that we might have contraband, and how, you know, on all those things. And it's just like, I feel personally like, you know what I'm saying? Let's get out of what we in now and figure that part out, because there's so many other things going on. It's like, you don't want to, you feel what I'm saying? It's like, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's a lot.
I mean, if there was legal shops, whatever the pipeline is that went from Mexico to Atlanta that led to 11-year-old Jeezy, I don't know what your name was at that time, but 11-year-old Jeezy getting in the game, that would not have existed. Mm. And do you think, knowing the scope of your life, do you think your life would be better if that avenue had not existed and you hadn't had to go through the road and the pain, you know, plus, the, you know, but also, the, you know, the money, because if you were working at McDonald's like Calvin, you would not have made, you know, the many thousands you made to be able to be a CEO and all this sort of things and take care of mom the way you did. And so looking back, if we could have made drugs legal and that avenue was not available to you at all, because if you were a white boy in the suburbs, that avenue is not available. It's not happening, right? So what do you think about that?
I don't think I would have changed a thing. You know what I'm saying? I really don't. Because I learned so much, and everything I went through was valuable for me. And the doors that I opened, that I was able to open because of the things that I went through, would have probably been closed for a lot of people. And the fact that I was able to do that with the small resources that I was given, not to say I didn't hurt people or, you know, do things that were foul on the come up, but I think the circumstances were different for me, and it's going back to that immigrant mindset. I don't think I would be as strong as I am. I don't think I would be as open-minded as I am. You know what I'm saying? I think I would be sheltered and not understand how the world works. And I probably would walk out here every day like the world owes me something, and it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? And that'll make me, that'll put me in a position where I would be weak-minded, and things that came at me would break me. You know what I'm saying? Would make me fold, and that's not who I am. And that's that adversity thing again. You know what I'm saying? It didn't come to me. I had to go get it. And I had to figure out how to get it. You know, it's that ant mentality. I don't give a hell where you at. If some ants want some food, it could be
we coming. You're
top of the cabinet. You
know we saying? Coming.
Yo, go.
One of the most incredible things I ever heard of, after Hurricane Katrina, you opened your house and you had people who were suffering, who were victims from that, living in your house.
Yes.
Talk about why you did that and how that experience played out for you. Because I mean, that's that. You know, people talk about that shit and they don't usually live that. Right. And, you know, that's incredible.
I mean, for me, Hurricane Katrina was real. New Orleans is a real city. I love New Orleans.
Hell
and
yeah.
At the time, in Houston as well. And I'm going to tell you how they call it. Like, what was happening was a lot of people that I knew, and even in Atlanta, what was happening was people were coming from New Orleans because they didn't have anywhere to go. And if you know anything about New Orleans, like, it's a different city. So the good and the bad were coming. And I actually lost 2-3 friends from people that came from New Orleans during that, and they was here doing a lot of robbing and killing. And I lost, like, 2 friends doing that. And I was on tour at the time, and, you know, some people hit me that I knew. It was like, I got some people that need somewhere to stay. And I was just like, you know, I'm on tour, like, the crib wide open, like, you know, however, whatever. Just, you know, just make sure they good, make sure they straight. So it wasn't nothing that I was doing for public acknowledgement. It was me saying, I'm on tour, and I'm not going to be back for 5-6 months, and I don't mind if somebody stay at the house.
How many people were at the house?
maybe eight, if I think, you know what I'm saying? But it was like, it was cool. It was like, not in the sense of the word, it's just like, that's who I am at heart. It could have been more, because I never was there. I was on tour. I was going around the world. So it was more so like, whatever y'all need, whatever I could do, you know, I'm going to do what I could do from here. You know what I'm saying? And for me, and people ask me about that, and I just never really thought about it as anything other than noble. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never really thought it was a thing. You know what I'm saying? It was more so like, you know, and I'm like that with anybody. Like, you know, it was one point the whole hood was living with me. You know what I mean? Everybody, mamas, cousins, brothers, you know what I mean? It was like, whatever, you know? But that's who I am. You know, if you can get the shirt off my back, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, something depending on how I'm feeling, you can get my shoes too. You know what I'm saying?
What are some of your goals for the next 5 years?
Next five is to push the envelope. That's my first goal. Cover Men's Health magazine too. I'm going for that. But to push the envelope on what's like, I watched what Steve Harvey did, you know? I seen what Tony Robbins did. I watched what, you know, Arthur Blank has done in the city. These different people, but it's just like, there's no one that looks like myself and that talks like me that are in any of those positions, you know? And my goal in the next five is to get closer to that as possible by opening new doors and doing new things that people stereotype us not to be able to do because we're supposed to be one way. So everything I've done, everything I've been doing, even with my album, the way I'm going about it, that ain't typical, especially at a time like this. We all know the formula. I want to be different. Dare to be different. I want to go farther. I want to achieve more. I want to, you know, push some boundaries. I want to do things that when people look back and say, like, wow, like, Jeezy really opened the door for us here. I want to be that guy. You know, I want to be the guy to go run up the hill first and check it out and then come back down and tell you, it's cool. Y'all can come on up.
One of the things that you did during the pandemic quarantine and all that, got engaged. Are yes. y'all working on a wedding? Are you talking about getting married next year? Or are you going to postpone that till we can have a real in-person thing again?
I would love to. You know, I love people. I love my family. You know what I'm saying? I love, you know, outings and everybody get together and dance and have a good time. So, you know, given the circumstances, it is kind of weird that you can't really move, you know, fast about it. But, you know, it's coming definitely soon. Yeah.
Maybe next year?
Yeah. You know, you can ask her, but I'm quite sure. Yeah. She'll elaborate on it, you know. I just try to stay in my lane, you know.
Stay yeah, out of the way. No, I know what you mean. I'm married. She did most of the planning. She wanted me to be involved to a certain extent to where, you know, you don't just leave this on me. You're involved in it too. But I'm doing most of it because I want it to be my vision.
Well, the thing about it is we're a team. You know what I'm saying? We locked in when it comes to that. And it's just like, you know, I'm a teammate. You know what I'm saying? I play, you know, to win. And it's just dope to even be able to have those conversations with somebody that smart and that on top of their game and that has a vision like yourself. So, you know, I'm quite sure to be extravagant and you know, something that, you know, we probably never forget forever. So I'm curious to see what she come with. You know what I'm saying? I'm getting my little, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Move it.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm going to work on my dance moves. That's all I'm going to do.
let me ask you something, man. You know, I know you got the firepower. What's your favorite gun?
Ah, man. F&H. Got to keep that. And you know, I got the new mini ARs. I like those. But, you know, back in the day, it was the Glock. I rapped about it every day. You know, the Glock 40, that was like my, you know what I mean? And I think that's it. Like, you know, you really don't want to do those, what do they call them? The baby AKs. Like, those, I don't know what that's for. That's like, you know, the Draco. It's just like it's confusing.
why the Glock? Why was that your favorite?
It just symbolized safe to me. It's just like it's black, it's solid. It has a dope case, you can lock it up. It just came the way it came. And, you know, I've always been a defense person. Like, I'm about protecting me and my family and the people I love. So it ain't nothing that you brandish. It's nothing that you it's not for that. It's to protect. You know what I'm saying? And I just feel like it was something this dependable. And plus, you got the hair trigger. So, you know.
It's coming out easy.
Right. You feel me?
What's your superpower? What is the thing that you do better than other people that has led to the success that you've had?
Think.
Think?
I'm a thinker. I visualize things, you know, and there's a lot of times I can be asleep and see something play out. You know what I'm saying? Or I can be still and watch something play out and understand what I need to do to make that play out. And this used to scare me at first, but I had to embrace it. Like, I knew I would be here doing music and doing what I'm doing now. I saw that a long time ago, when I was in my, you know, I was in my teens, I knew that I would be doing something like this. And it's crazy. Like, I swear to you, like, I saw myself, I used to see it all the time, myself, and you're talking about somebody who came from, like, icy watches, big chains, and da-da-da, and all crazy shit. And I used to be like, I used to visualize myself being in a dope suit, sitting in a chair with a clean watch with no diamonds, talking to people that was important. I saw that way back then. I mean, even how I knew how I was going to wear the suits, Prince, mock necks, you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw that. You know what I'm saying? Back then, and I watch it play out every day. You know, I knew that I would talk to people of influence, and I knew that I wouldn't have to change myself to talk to them. I just had to get there. So I visualize a lot of things. Like, I visualize when I made my first album. Like, I understood. Like, I was like, yo, Jay-Z has to be on my first album, and I didn't know Jay personally, but when the person who signed me, Kevin Lyles, left Def Jam, I'm walking through the corridor, and I see a Maybach pull up and walking into the Def Jam building, and the door gets out, door opens, and he gets out. It's Jay-Z. He like, Jeezy. I'm like, yo, what up? And he like, come on, let's walk upstairs. I'm the new president, by the way. Oh shit. You feel me? Like, it's those moments where you like, damn, like all of it come full circle. And even with this, like this project, when I came to do it, I knew I had to talk to my people for my people, and I had to elevate them in a way, but I already saw the other components coming together for me to be able to do that. And that took me, you know, working on myself and doing things differently, so that they'll take me seriously. But I saw that. I saw what the packaging looked like. I saw what the theme was. I saw what I felt. I saw that before I went into it. And that's when I know I'm doing the right thing. You know what I'm saying? So that's my superpower.
Word.
Isn't
word.
It?
Word. Yo, what's you had money, some money coming up, right? But you had a lot of it as an adult. What is the good thing? What is the best thing about having money? What does that give you?
It's money is a tool. It's a tool. And if you, what I started realizing is, like, money is supposed to give you experiences. You know what I'm saying? Money is supposed to take you places you couldn't go if you didn't have it, as far as like vacationing and not having, you know, certain stresses about things that you got to do for your family. But what I did learn is a tool, and it's not happiness. You know what I'm saying? It's not. If you're not happy and you get money, you're just going to be a rich, unhappy person. It's not going to change anything, because it's like anything else. You get over it. And the more of it you got, the more toxic it can become if you're not mentally stable or mentally strong. So for me, when I learned it was a tool and I understood that, it just made me appreciate life more, because I'd rather be able to go take my family to see an experience than to just go buy something they don't need because I have the money. You know what I'm saying? I'd rather, you know, put my mom and be able to take care of her. And so she wouldn't have to work at a certain age, and just to make sure she's good and she has the things that she needs in life, you know, the things that she needs to maintain, rather than to go buy her, you know, some things that she don't need. You know what I'm saying? Me, myself, personally, I'd rather know that I don't have anything to worry about than to just go, you know, squander things off when I know, you know, real estate is the way. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a tool. You know what I mean? And once you, and it shouldn't change who you are as a person, because, you know, some people get money and lose their mind. You know what I'm saying? Like, God, like, I'm rich. You got to listen to me. I'm like, no, man, no, you rich, but you're ignorant. Like, I can't do it. You know what I'm saying? It sounds crazy to me, man. You know?
That was great. Thanks so much to Jeezy for a great interview. And thanks to you for listening. And thanks to our super producers, Britt, Marcus Harkis, Noel, Sam Montes, Jason Reynolds, Gerville Calais, Michelle, Brenda Cox, Kathy F., Keena Murphy, and Earl Dorsey. Torre Show gives you fuel to power your dreams, because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. You can find me on Twitter at Torre and on Instagram at Torre Show and on Patreon at patreon.com/Torre Show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Jackie Garifano. Our editor is Ryan Woodhall. Our photographers are Chuck Marcus and Shonda Covington. Our booker is Claudia Jean. We're distributed by DCP Entertainment. And we will be back on Friday and on Wednesday with more amazing guests, because the man can't shut us down.